to take the power of the people to get this policy passed through city council.
So I've been speaking with Tirsa Orellana, Christian Orellana Bauer, and Ajay Amaechi, the previous co-chairs of the Phase 3 Powers and Duties phase of the Portland Police Accountability Commission. Thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you for having us.
And
thank you. Thanks, Sam.
Thanks again to Ajay, Christian, and Tirsa for talking about the work of the PAC, and we will be back next month to talk with the co-chairs of the Structure and Details phase, or we are hoping to. As a reminder to listeners who would like to get involved, the PAC's meetings are public, primarily held on Zoom, and include at least monthly public listening sessions as well as public comment at every meeting, and also accepted in writing. To learn more about the PAC's work and view the documents they have produced so far, check out their website at portland.gov/police-accountability. They just had a meeting last night for the Subcommittee on Reporting and Transparency, and their next scheduled meeting is on Thursday, March 2nd, and is a joint meeting of the Board Membership and Oversight Agency Subcommittees. This has been Totality of Circumstances for February 2023. Catch us next month on March 28th. That's Tuesday at 5:30 p.m. right after the KBOO Evening News here on KBOO Portland, your community radio station. Have a great night.
You are tuned into KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM and streaming on the web at kboo.fm.
Thank you for tuning in to KBOO Community Radio during this special programming campaign, All Thrills, No Frills, Volume 2. This February and March, you will hear different marathons and series, all brought to you by our talented programmers, including specials like Black History and Future series. If you'd like to help KBOO reach our $17,000 goal by March 25th, go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to the number 44321 right now. We thank you and you're welcome.
Hello. My name is Jeff, and I am the host of the KBOO show, A Matter of Public Records. Mark E. Smith, singer and driving force of the band The Fall, was born on March 5, 1957, and I have put together a special show to celebrate. It will feature music by The Fall, some spoken word pieces by Mark E. Smith, music that influenced The Fall, and bands that were inspired by The Fall. You can hear the show on March 6th, starting at midnight, exclusively on KBOO, as part of our All Thrills, No Frills Winter Membership Drive. Please consider making a donation today. Thank you.
Oh, what a world! KBOO 90.7. Dasha T said that.
When someone calls you an abomination, or when they say that you're evil, or whatever they say about you as an LGBTQ person, those words only have the power that you give them yourself. That takes a lot of strength, yep. But it's very, very helpful. LGBTQ people are loved by God, and we're wonderful, Barry. PTSD isn't what's wrong with you. It's about what happened to you.
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Greg Gordon. Finland transitions to easier gender ID markers. Canadians counter trans female athletic supremacy myths. And how to thrive despite conversion therapy caused PTSD. All that and more this week, now that you've discovered This Way Out.
I'm MR Raquel.
And I'm Michael Taylor Gray.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending February 4th, 2023. Finland's parliament approved legislation February 1st to let trans adults 18 and over change their legal gender without a psychiatric assessment. The new law also did away with the requirement that trans individuals undergo sterilization or present proof that they're infertile. Activists lobbied for over a decade to overturn that requirement, which was designed to prevent transgender people from having children. One of the country's leading queer advocacy groups, SETA, called it a victory for human rights, but noted that there's still work to do. The rights of children and young people must be secured next, it said in a statement following the vote. Passage of the bill was a priority for Prime Minister Sanna Marin as her government prepares for a general election in April. Marin was raised by her two moms in what she calls a rainbow family.
Transgender girls and women do not have a competitive advantage in elite-level sports. That's the conclusion of a comprehensive review of all the scientific literature published on the topic in the last decade in the English language. Contrary to what passes for prevailing wisdom, the researchers concluded that there is little evidence to show that factors relating to male puberty, such as lung size and bone density, produce an advantage for trans athletes. Trans girls and women who have begun testosterone suppression have no clear biological advantage, they found. A number of elite sport governing bodies have established restrictions or outright bans on trans girls and women. The researchers found strong evidence that those policies are based on transphobia, not science. The study was commissioned by the Canadian Center for Ethics in Sport.
Utah has become the first state in 2023 to ban gender-affirming care for minors. Republican Governor Spencer Cox signed the bill on January 28th to deny young people access to puberty blockers, hormone therapy, and surgical procedures, although such surgeries are very rare. Virtually every professional, physical, and mental health organization in the United States opposes legislation like this for doing real harm to trans young people and to the people who love and care for them. According to Shannon Minter of the National Center for Lesbian Rights, the Utah law uses an absurdly complex set of restrictions to enact what is essentially a blanket ban on treatment for all future patients. Civil rights groups are expected to challenge the law in court, as they have a similar law in Arkansas.
The European Court of Human Rights ruled in late January that a no-promo-homo law enacted in Lithuania in 2009 violates the European Convention on Human Rights. Children's book author Nerenga Makate challenged the law in 2019 after authorities censored one of her books because it features two same-gender couples. The government accused her of disseminating information to minors that expresses contempt for family values. The book, Amber Heart, features characters confronting social exclusion and discrimination. They include people with disabilities, migrants, and nomadic Roma people. Two of the six stories describe romantic relationships between characters of the same gender. The Eurocourt ruled, equal and mutual respect for persons of different sexual orientations is inherent in the whole fabric of the convention. The unanimous 17-judge court rejected the Lithuanian government's claim that the book contained sexually explicit passages. After Makate died in 2020, her mother continued the legal case on behalf of Makate's estate. The court ordered Lithuania to pay 17,000 euros, about $18,400, in damages and legal costs.
Slovenia has officially become the first Eastern European nation to open civil marriage, including full adoption rights, to gay and lesbian couples. Lawmakers approved the legislation last October after Slovenia's constitutional court ruled that denying those rights to same-gender couples violated the nation's constitution. The law went into effect January 31st. Labor Minister Luka Mesic hailed the historic law at a news conference that day. From today, he declared, all same-sex marriages enjoy the same rights as everyone else. I think we made a big step forward as a country.
Finally this week, we have two stories from the new Republican-dominated U.S. House of Representatives that suggest how the next 2 years may unfold. Georgia Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, who made headlines in 2018 for suggesting that Jewish space lasers caused California wildfires, kicked off her tenure on the powerful House Oversight and Accountability Committee with more absurdities. The committee was reviewing how the Biden administration dispensed COVID pandemic funding. Comptroller General Gene Dodaro was dumbfounded by a question from Green about a favorite GOP target, drag queens.
Dodaro, can you tell me how much money was given to drag queens story hour?
I'm sorry, could you repeat that?
Who? Drag queen story time, where men dress up as women and read confusing books to children.
Yeah. First, I thought you said dry clean. So I'm sorry. No, I don't know the answer to either one of those two.
We need to look into this, and I urge you to do that. Bradbury Sullivan LGBT Community Center in Pennsylvania received $16,000 for drag queen story time from COVID cash. I think this is an issue that needs to be looked into. A lot of this money went to things that it should have never gone to, and I thank you so much, and I yield back the remainder of my time.
For the record, according to the Pennsylvania Humanities Council website, the Bradbury Sullivan LGBT Center was one of 92 recipients of a total of $1.4 million in 2022 to sustain humanities-related programs and organizations during the pandemic. Responding to Green's wild claim, the center said in a statement this week that it has never used government funds to operate this program. Our story hour programming has always been and remains underfunded.
Meanwhile, the momentous question of who should lead the Pledge of Allegiance sparked a fierce debate in the House Judiciary Committee this week. After far-right Florida Representative Matt Gaetz proposed starting each session with the Patriotic Pledge, Democrat David Cicilline of Rhode Island, who is both patriotic and proudly gay, offered an amendment. The ensuing debate showed that the committee is anything but indivisible.
You know, Mr. Issa just made reference to how important it is for us to display our commitment to the Constitution and to commit to defend it aggressively. So I'd like to offer an amendment to the amendment, adding in the second paragraph where the chair may designate an individual to lead the Pledge of Allegiance to add the following language. Provided, however, the pledge shall not be led by an individual who supported an insurrection against the government of the United States in any way. Because I think if we adopt this amendment, then we will be truthful in representing that stating this pledge is an affirmation of your defense of democracy and the Constitution. It's hard to take that claim seriously if, in fact, an individual who in any way supported an insurrection against the government of the United States is allowed to lead the pledge. So I would ask Mr. Gaetz to accept this friendly amendment, and I look forward to supporting it.
Would the gentleman yield for
I first ask
question?
Mr. Gaetz if he'll support the amendment.
Well, I'm concerned that you may be disqualifying too many of your own members, Mr. Cicilline.
I'm not concerned about that at all. Then agree to the amendment. Let's make this real. If you want to give someone the right to stand before the House Judiciary Committee and lead the Pledge of Allegiance at a bare minimum, let's guarantee that that person has not participated or supported or in any way helped an overthrow of the government of the United States.
Would the gentleman yield?
It's like a simple proposition.
It's not difficult to understand the resistance by majority Republicans on the committee to Cicilline's amendment. Some of them have been accused of at least encouraging the January 6th insurrection. They defeated Cicilline's amendment in a 24-13 vote. With reluctant Democratic support, the committee then approved the Gaetz Pledge of Allegiance proposal, with no restrictions on who can lead it.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending February 4th, 2023. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, edited by David Hunt, produced by Brian DeShazer, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Michael Taylor Gray. Stay healthy.
And I'm MR Raquel. Stay safe.
Isn't life beautiful? Isn't life gay? Isn't life the perfect thing to pass the time away?
I'm Edmund White. It is the overwhelming international flavor of the lesbian and gay rights movement that has proved so powerful over the decades. And one radio program has been there to record, to inform, and to entertain. So please keep listening to This Way Out on this station.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter.
Email us at info@thiswayout.org.
And through your financial contributions to our program.
More information about how you can give is online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
Anthony Venn Brown, who's based in Sydney, Australia, is well known around the world for his work engaging in dialogue with evangelical churches to create a better world for LGBTQ plus people and everyone else. Through his wealth of lived experience, he's also helped many LGBTQ plus people find self-acceptance and peace in the face of challenging religious backgrounds. Our Sydney correspondent Barry McKay spoke with Anthony via Skype recently to discuss some of his specific work with LGBTQ plus people who suffer from psychological trauma due to a damaging Christian upbringing.
Welcome, Anthony, to This Way Out.
Thanks, Barry.
In a nutshell, can you please tell us a little bit about your background in the fundamentalist Christian church and what you are doing nowadays with the LGBTQ plus community since you came out as gay?
Sure, Barry. In a nutshell, in a former life, I was a famous Pentecostal preacher, used to preach in all the mega churches in Australia to thousands every weekend. One of the first to go through gay conversion therapy in the world in a religious context. Anyway, came out in 1991. Sorry, resigned from the ministry in 1991 and came out the following year to live authentically as a gay man. My autobiography, A Life of Unlearning, is now 18 years. It's been selling still up to the third edition, and that's transformed the lives of thousands of people. And out of that, I have established an organization called Ambassadors and Bridge Builders International, and we reach out to churches, Christian organizations, and ministers to engage them in dialogue and provide training and resources to help them come to an understanding that LGBT people are loved by God, and we're wonderful, Barry.
So recently you were invited to speak at an online conference based in the US about religious trauma. You identified PTSD as a product of that trauma that many LGBTQ plus people go through, and you identified some strategies to help those who suffer from this. Could you summarize for us, please, what you had to contribute?
Sure. Look, this has come out of my own experience, Barry. That the disclaimer, of course, here is that I am not a therapist. I'm not trained or a professional in that area. So this is from my own experience. And for a number of years, I was experiencing PTSD, as some people often do, and not actually be aware of what was going on. My burnouts and emotional meltdowns and things, I just thought it was just too much pressure, but I got to a point where I realized this is what it's about. And I did go and see a therapist, and it was very helpful because he gave me a statement which has been gold to me, Barry, and that was: the trauma never leaves you, you just learn to manage it.
Good.
The trauma never leaves you, you just learn to manage it. And that was so helpful to me because I was expecting it to be gone in Jesus' name, you know. the old thinking was, I'll get healed of this and I'll be okay. So here are some of the things that I've used that have helped me to manage my PTSD. One of the things is that I believe it's important to maintain a sense of humor. That was one of the things that happened to me, as I got so many emails from readers of my autobiography telling me intense stories and of harm and of rejection and such painful things that, you know, I found that being in that space all the time, I lost my sense of humor. I've revived that. And as you probably have seen already, I still have that now today. Also, I think that personal development has been something that's been very helpful to me. It's always been of interest to me. There is a place for therapy, and therapy is very good, but I think there's also a great place for self-improvement and understanding the principles of the personal development profession, and that is, it's just been so good for me. And also to have future goals, which of course is part of personal development, having future goals. And I remember one time I was going through about 6 months of just feeling really, really depressed and not really knowing why, and actually feeling suicidal. And I thought, this is crazy, you know, what's going on here? And I remember that what I did was I decided that I would do a book launch for the third edition of A Life of Unlearning, and that focus, it just lifted me right out of it, Barry. It was like that depression and those thoughts disappeared because I had something in the future that I love to do. Also, I think that part of that personal development is, yes, personal development is to be very positive in your thinking and speaking. So that's always been important to me.
Yes.
I think another thing is also is to learn to become an observer of what's going on. So if you're having PTSD reactions and getting triggered, to step out of that and look more at what's actually going on, and observe it, be more than a participator. Another thing is to refuse to give people or experiences power over you. So that's very much that's once again a part of that personal development thing, is realizing that it is about your own personal power and being very determined. I am not going to allow those people to have power over me or those experiences. Another thing that's very useful as well, Barry, is to learn to reframe experiences. And by reframing them, you look at them from a different perspective, and that can take away the negative influences. One thing that I think some people find very challenging, but was very useful for me, was forgiveness, to forgive others.
Yes.
Some people will find that hard to take, I know, and I understand that. But I remember I had an experience where I'd been rejected by the denomination and all my close friends, and I stood in the kitchen and I forgave every one of them right there and then, because I knew if I didn't forgive them, I would be eaten up with bitterness and resentment. I'd seen it to happen to other people.
Yes.
And I didn't want it to happen to me. So
yeah, holding on to grudges is never good, is it?
No, I chose to forgive. That's what I did. I chose to forgive. And often people will say, how come you're in such a good place? And I'll often refer back to that experience, you know.
I think
another principle that I found helpful is to learn to express emotions and not to fear them. So sometimes that could be anger, sometimes that could be grief. I found that I had a lot of grief buried inside me because of what happened. If you've read A Life of Unlearning, you'll know that I stood in front of a congregation of hundreds of people and resigned from the ministry and confessed to them. That was the most traumatic experience of my entire life. And so there's a lot of grief.
I felt very humiliated.
Totally humiliated. I had lost everything, Barry. Everything that I held dear, everything I'd worked towards, that I had to rebuild my life. So learning to express those emotions, not to fear them, and to work through them can be very helpful. Also, another principle, Barry, that I've found helpful is to make peace with your past. What does that mean? I think that sometimes people, LGBTQ people from Christian backgrounds, sometimes for some of them, they're looking at their Christian past and everything is bad. everything is wrong. But that isn't always the case.
No, that's correct. Yeah.
And so by making peace with the past, I find that looking for the good and celebrating the good,
yeah,
is not about denial, or it's not about betrayal of what happened to you. It can be a very, very healthy response.
No, I agree with you there. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's always good things that happen, even through the darkest hours. There's always good things that happen in our lives.
That's true, yes. You know, and they're not all bad. You met some lovely people, all that. Yeah. So we're up to number 11, and that is that, and sometimes people find this hard to translate to their own experience, but I have, and I hope that they can as well, and that is that words only have the power that we give them.
Yeah.
We only have the power we give them. So, you know, when someone calls you an abomination, or when they say that you're evil, or whatever they say about you as an LGBTQ person, those words only have the power that you give them yourself. That takes a lot of strength, yep, but it's very, very helpful.
Yes.
Don't let them have that power over you. Also, I think another of important thing is to know what your triggers are. I'm very conscious of the things that can trigger me nowadays. There was a point where I wasn't conscious of that, but I am very much these days. So I either prepare myself for that situation, or it may be that I choose not to be involved in that situation, or to avoid it. But to have a conscious understanding.
Again, you have to be quite strong in yourself to look at, you know, when those triggers come, to be able to withstand them.
Exactly, Barry. You know, and I am speaking here from, you know, a man that has, since 1992, has had to work through all this stuff. And in the writing of my book was also re-traumatizing and working with people who emailed me, who read my book, also was re-traumatizing. Which brings us to number 13, which is don't feed the trauma.
Yes.
I don't know how many times, but I see people, they're going to the groups, they're going to the comments, they're going into things which actually is feeding their trauma and their anger and everything. And it's like self-abuse, actually.
Yeah.
Not very healthy. So up to number 14. Just to remind people, it's okay to avoid the triggers and to avoid the PTSD, and also it's okay to get triggered. So we're all human, and no matter how many wonderful principles you've got, you will find that there'll be some times when maybe it doesn't work as for you. I've got a couple of lovely sayings I'd like to finish off with, Barry, if that's
sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
One is by Paulo Coelho, and he said, don't allow your wounds to transform you into someone you are not.
Good.
I love that. And this final one is, PTSD isn't what's wrong with you. It's about what happened to you.
Yes. Well, Anthony Van Brown, thank you very much for sharing your experiences with us and your thoughts on PTSD and the LGBTQ plus community and how it may affect us, and especially in the religious contexts. And what's your website, please?
Sure, that is www.abbi, which is abbi.org.au. And I should also say that this actual presentation is on our YouTube channel.
Great.
Which
great.
Is Gay Ambassador.
So people can look you up there.
Exactly.
Okay, Anthony, thank you very much.
Thanks, Barry, for the opportunity.
This is Barry Mackay in Sydney, Australia, for This Way Out.
Once again, you'll find Anthony Van Brown's Ambassadors and Bridge Builders International online at abbi.org.au.
news. Ain't that good news?
Hi, I'm Brian DeShazer, CEO of This Way Out Radio and Overnight Productions, Inc. This Way Out has been selected as one of the first-year collections for the Library of Congress National Recording Preservation Board Radio Preservation Task Force's new program, Sound Submissions. This means This Way Out programs will be preserved for future generations. You can help preserve the future of This Way Out. Email us at info@thiswayout.org to subscribe to our newsletter. Thank you for listening and for your support.
Thanks for discovering This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by M.R. Raquel and Michael Taylor Gray and produced by Brian DeShazer. Our correspondent was Barry McKay. Mason Williams, Leonard Bernstein, the Marshall Tucker Band, Marsha Hines, Argent, and Sam Cooke performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson, composer, performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks to Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. This program continues only with the critical support of our listener donors. Thank you.
Greetings, I'm Ansa Craiglin.
And I'm Winston Watson.
And I'm Donald Clark.
And we are The Meditation.
We are listening to Community Radio.
KBOO
90.7 FM, Portland, Oregon.
Yeah. Dig it.
The first demand is that we have effective civil rights legislation and the right to vote.
Lesbians and gay men have always been in the vanguard of struggles for liberation and justice in this country.
I'm a man like you. I want to live like you. This country is mine, too. I paid as much for it as you.
They will come to your front rooms and in your closets. They will come for the perverts. And where will you be when they come?
Welcome to This Way Out, the international LGBTQ radio magazine. I'm Lucia Chappelle. Japanese high officials sacked for homophobic remarks, captains of Christianity condemn same-gender criminalization, and Black queer history repeats relevant messages. Those stories and more this week, now that you've found This Way Out.
I'm Marcos Najera.
And I'm Sarah Montague.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting LGBTQ communities around the world for the week ending February 11th, 2023. Japan's economy and trade official Masayoshi Arai told reporters that he does not even want to look at and would not want to live next door to same-gender couples or transgender people. Now, Prime Minister Fumio Kishida feels the same way about him. Kishida fired Arai after his top aide supposedly off-the-record comments. Arai claimed on February 4th opening civil marriage to lesbian and gay couples would change society and that quite a few people would abandon this country. His apology came a little too late. The Prime Minister called the remarks inexcusable, even though his government has fought against marriage equality from the country's courts to the legislature. Growing public support for it may be contributing to Kishida's floundering popularity. Kishida's embarrassment is amplified by the fact that he's scheduled to host a meeting of the G7 in Tokyo in less than 3 months. Japan is the only G7 nation without marriage equality. Following the Intergovernmental Cooperative Summit in Germany last June, the G7 issued a joint communique in support of LGBTQ rights. It said, "We seek to ensure full, equal, and meaningful participation of LGBTIQ+ persons in politics, economics, education, and all other spheres of society."
Pope Francis' call to decriminalize private consensual adult same-gender sex has received the blessings of the head of the Anglican Communion and a top Presbyterian minister. The three Christian leaders spoke this week during a rare joint news conference with the Associated Press on board the Pope's jet returning from a visit to South Sudan. The Pope had told AP in a January 24th interview, being homosexual is not a crime. Archbishop of Canterbury Justin Welby affirmed Francis's expanded commentary on the flight, saying, I wish I had spoken as eloquently and clearly as the Pope. I entirely agree with every word he said. Church of Scotland moderator, the Right Reverend Ian Greenshields, added his Presbyterian voice during the Airborne News Conference. He said, there is nowhere in the four Gospels where I can see anything other than Jesus expressing love to whomever he meets, and as Christians, that is the only expression that we can possibly give to any human being, in any circumstance. The trio had travelled to South Sudan in hopes of advancing this fledgling country's peace process. It's also one of 67 countries around the world that make homosexuality a crime. Convictions in 11 of them pose the death penalty.
Sri Lanka's Minister of Foreign Affairs, Ali Sabri, has announced support for decriminalizing same-gender sex. He told the Daily Morning News outlet on February 9th that the government favors a private member bill to overturn the predominantly Buddhist South Asian nation's British colonial anti-queer sex laws. They carry penalties of up to 10 years in prison. Gentle nudging by the UK, Norway, Canada, and the US at a recent UN meeting may have pushed the move to decriminalize queer sex along. But Sabri was quick to add that marriage equality is not on the table. Leading queer rights group Equal Ground is very optimistic, but cautiously so, according to longtime Sri Lankan activist Rosanna Flamer Caldera. She told the Washington Blade, it's been more than 19 years that our organization has been advocating for decriminalization, and it's good to see the work bearing fruit, finally. But it's still a long road ahead. Flamer Caldera is right. It's not clear how long the legislative process might take.
Hong Kong's Court of Final Appeal ruled this week that full reassignment surgery should not be a requirement for trans people to legally change their gender. Two transgender men went to the semi-autonomous Chinese city's top court to avoid further surgery after their mastectomies. Lower courts had dismissed their lawsuit. Trans men have also had to undergo complete hysterectomies and construction of a neo-penis before they could change their gender marker on government documents. The February 6th High Court ruling called the government-mandated surgery unconstitutional and an unacceptably harsh burden. It said, the policy's consequence is to place persons like the appellants in the dilemma of having to choose whether to suffer regular violations of their privacy rights or to undergo highly invasive and medically unnecessary surgery, infringing their right to bodily integrity. Clearly, this does not reflect a reasonable balance. Liam Mike is with Quarks, a local transgender youth organization. He told the Associated Press, every individual has different preferences or decisions in their own gender transition journey. I hope that the government will be referencing the advice from the court to protect the right of all transgender people.
South Dakota will become the latest U.S. state to ban gender-affirming care for transgender young people if Republican Governor Kristi Noem signs the measure the Republican-dominated Senate passed on February 9th. The measure sailed through the Republican-dominated House the previous week. Hormone therapy and puberty blockers for trans people under the age of 18 is specifically outlawed. Healthcare professionals who violate the law would lose their licenses and could even be sued. The law also bans any form of gender-affirming surgery performed on transgender minors, something that's rarely, if ever, done. Similar measures have been introduced in more than 20 Republican-dominated U.S. states this year. Utah enacted its own version last week. Civil rights groups have already secured federal court injunctions against enforcement of laws in Alabama and Arkansas. Utah and South Dakota are likely to be in the legal crosshairs soon, too.
Finally, the thin Republican majority in the U.S. House of Representatives convened a hearing this week to investigate the so-called liberal bias of big tech, specifically targeting Twitter. The powerful House Oversight Committee gathered to expose alleged secret emails of Hunter Biden and claims that Twitter suppressed efforts to leak damning information about the president's son. While insurrection sympathizer Jim Jordan of Ohio led the Republican obsession with alleged left-wing conspiracies, minority Democrats pointed out that the information being censored from public dissemination were supposedly pictures of Hunter's privates. Republicans also accused the Biden administration of pressuring Twitter to remove tweets it found offensive. Testimony actually indicated that the Trump administration, in fact, did so. Democrat Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez of New York put real criticisms of Twitter on the table. She asked the platform's former head of trust and safety, Yoel Roth, and former content moderation team member, Anika Collier-Haverill, about libs of TikTok. That account is a leading social media peddler of inflammatory lies about LGBTQ people, especially targeting the health care of transgender young people.
Ms. Navaroli, are you familiar with the account Libs of TikTok?
I have heard of it from the news, yes.
Mr. Roth, are you familiar with this account?
Yes, ma'am, I am.
Are you aware from August 11th to August 16th, that account posted false information about Boston Children's Hospital, claiming that they were providing hysterectomies to children?
Yes, I am aware of that and other claims from the account.
And are you aware that this lie was then circulated by other prominent far-right influencers?
Yes.
And are you aware that all these claims, which I have reiterated, were false, culminated in a real-life harassment and ultimately a bomb threat to the Boston Children's Hospital?
Yes, I am aware.
And this account is still on that platform today, isn't it?
Regrettably, yes, it is.
Despite inspiring a bomb threat due to the right-wing incitement of violence against trans Americans in this country, because they cannot let go of this obsession with fixating violence and inciting violence against trans and LGBT people, in addition to immigrants, in addition to women of color. This is a party that cannot pick on anyone their own size. And they are trying to co-opt an entire social media platform and use the power of this committee and of Congress in order to pursue a political agenda. I yield back.
Democratic U.S. Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez.
That's News Wrap, global queer news with attitude, for the week ending February 11th, 2023. Follow the news in your area and around the world. An informed community is a strong community.
News Wrap is written by Greg Gordon, edited by Lucia Chappelle, produced by Brian DeShazor, and brought to you by you.
Thank you. Help keep us in ears around the world at thiswayout.org, where you can also read the text of this newscast and much more. For This Way Out, I'm Marcos Najera. Stay healthy.
And I'm Sarah Montague. Stay safe.
I'm Sarah Huckabee Sanders. The dividing line in America is no longer between right or left. The choice is between normal or crazy.
Some Republicans want Medicare and Social Security to sunset. I'm not saying it's a majority. Anybody who doubts it, contact my office. I'll give you a copy.
Our listeners support This Way Out in many ways.
By subscribing to our e-newsletter,
email us at info@thiswayout.org,
and through your financial contributions to our program.
More information and a link to give are online at thiswayout.org.
Thank you.
Last I can be free. Yeah. Listen, I mean, I really can be me.
The late great faith leader and pop music star Archbishop Carl Bean sang out about finally being free as a black gay man over 30 years ago. He would not have expected then that Black History Month in the year 2023 would be celebrated in a country so at odds with the very meaning of that history. Conservative hucksters in the U.S. are making political points by insisting that slavery be redefined as forced relocation, and that references to queer theory be ripped out of African American studies courses.
I have a dream.
It's not unusual for many of those same government officials to quote the Reverend Dr. Martin Luther King's famous speech at the 1963 March on Washington as proof that they themselves are free of any bigotry. At the same time, they strongly oppose the goals of that march. Civil rights leader Bayard Rustin was the march's principal organizer, the gay man who exposed King to the nonviolent practices of Mahatma Gandhi. He was introduced at the march by the venerable later leader A. Philip Randolph.
Bayard Rustin, deputy director of the march, will read the demands.
Friends, at 5 o'clock today, the leaders whom you have heard will go to President Kennedy to carry the demands of this revolution. It is now time for you to act. I will read each demand, and you will respond to it, so that when Mr. Wilkins and Dr. King and the other 8 leaders go, they are carrying with them the demands which you have given your approval to. The first demand is that we have effective civil rights legislation, no compromise, no filibuster, and that it include public accommodations, decent housing, integrated education, FEPC, and the right to vote. What do you say? Number two, they want that we demand the withholding of federal funds from all programs in which discrimination exists. What do you say? We demand that segregation be ended in every school district in the year 1963. We demand the enforcement of the 14th Amendment, the reducing of congressional representation of states where citizens are disenfranchised. We demand an executive order banning discrimination in all housing supported by federal funds. We demand that every person in this nation, black or white, be given training and work with dignity to defeat unemployment and automation. We demand that there be an increase in the national minimum wage so that men may live in dignity. We finally demand that all of the rights that are given to any citizen be given to black men and men of every minority group, including a strong FEPC. We demand!
Bayard Rustin was squeezed out of his leadership role in the civil rights movement due to his known homosexuality and his past affiliation with the Communist Party. Many of the demands of the 1963 March on Washington he helped pen are painfully relevant again today. Poet, author, and feminist philosopher Audre Lorde recalled the 1963 March on Washington when she spoke at the first National March on Washington for Lesbian and Gay Rights in 1979. Before the word intersectionality came into being, her words filled the silences that tried to divide the issues of race, sexuality, gender, and class into separate categories.
30 years ago, the first time I came to Washington, my family and I couldn't eat ice cream in a drugstore here because we were black. Now, since then, I have come to Washington many times to demonstrate and to testify to different aspects of myself and my beliefs. And I see many familiar faces from those past marches here today. For lesbians and gay men have always been in the vanguard of struggles for liberation and justice in this country and within our communities. The first National Conference of Third World Lesbians and Gay Men met in Washington over the past 4 days, and it was an outstanding success. We had third world lesbians and gay men as delegates from over 40 states, third world lesbians and gay men from Mexico, from Canada, and from England. Now, we have all come together to demonstrate our power as lesbians and gay men in behalf of our own rights. And this is the beginning of a new front, for we are saying to the world that the struggle of lesbians and gay men is a real and particular and inseparable part of the struggle of all oppressed people within this country. I am proud to raise my voice here this day as a black lesbian feminist committed to struggle for a world where all our children can grow free from the diseases of racism, of sexism, of classism, and of homophobia. For those oppressions are inseparable. The question always is, what kind of a world do we want to be a part of? And affirmation and work does not stop with this march on Washington. Each of us has a responsibility to take this struggle back to her and his community, translate it into daily action. The National Conference of Third World Lesbians and Gay Men and this march today were once only visions of what could be. Now all of us have made it our reality. Let us carry this solidarity that we are professing here today back with us into our everyday lives, tomorrow and the day after and next week and next year. And let it be reflected in a renewed commitment to struggle for a future where we can all flourish, for not one of us will ever be free until we are all free.
Audre Lorde was not the only black lesbian feminist poet at the 1979 Third World Conference and March on Washington for Lesbian and Gay Rights. Pat Parker challenged the rally crowd to commit to resistance no matter how long it took, no matter what walk of life they came from.
Where will you be when they come? They will not come a mob rolling through the streets, but quickly and quietly move into our homes to remove the evil, the queerness, the faggotry from their midst. They will not come clothed in brown and swastikas or bearing chests heavy with gleaming crosses. The time and need for such ruses are over. They will come in business suits to buy your homes and bring bodies to fill your jobs. They will come in robes to rehabilitate and white coats to subjugate. And where will you be when they come? Where will we all be when they come? And they will come. They will come because we are defined as opposite, perverse, and we are perverse. Every time we watched a queer hassled in the streets and said nothing, it was an act of perversion. Every time we lied about the boyfriend or girlfriend at coffee break, it was an act of perversion. Every time we heard, "I don't mind gays, but why must they be blatant?" and said nothing, it was an act of perversion. Every time we let a lesbian mother lose her child and did not fill the courtrooms, it was an act of perversion. Every time we let straights make out in our bars while we couldn't touch because of the laws, it was an act of perversion. Every time we put on the proper clothes to go to a family wedding and left our lovers at home, it was an act of perversion. Every time we heard, "Who I go to bed with is my personal choice, it's personal, not political," and said nothing, it was an act of perversion.
Every time we let straight relatives bury our dead and push our lovers away, it was an act of perversion. And they will come for the perverts. And it won't matter if you're homosexual, not a faggot, lesbian, not a dyke, gay, not queer. It won't matter if you own your own business, have a good job, or an SSI. It won't matter if you're black, Chicano, Native American, Asian, or white. It won't matter if you're from New York or Los Angeles, Galveston, or Sioux Falls. It won't matter if you're butch or femme, not into roles, monogamous, non-monogamous. It won't matter if you're Catholic, Baptist, atheist, Jewish, or MCC. They will come. They will come to the cities and to the land, to your front rooms and in your closets. They will come for the perverts. And where will you be when they come?
That was Black lesbian poet Pat Parker at the first National March on Washington for Lesbian and Gay Rights in 1979. James Baldwin is acknowledged as one of the preeminent U.S. writers of the 20th century, although the racism of his native land led him to spend much of his creative life outside the country. His carefully considered and searing analysis of the causes of inner-city unrest during the late 1960s is difficult to hear even today, as witnessed by the fact that we have here censored one of his carefully considered words. He would no doubt find it ironic that in the name of anti-racism, it is dangerous to be so blunt about the racism he was describing.
Black people are in the streets. It has to do with the lives they're forced to lead in this country. And they're forced to lead these lives by the indifference and the apathy, and a certain kind of ignorance, a very willful ignorance, on the part of their co-citizens. Everybody knows, no matter what they do not know, that they wouldn't like to be a black man in this country. They know that, and they shut their minds against the rest of it, all the implications of being a black father, or a black woman, or a black son, and all of the implications involved in a human being's endeavor to take care of his wife, to take care of his children, to raise his children to be men and women in the teeth of a structure which is built to deny that I can be a human being or that my child can be. The great question in the country has been all the years that I've been living here, and I was born here 43 years ago, is what does the Negro want? And this question masks a terrible knowledge. I want exactly what you want. And you know what you want. I want to be left alone. I don't want any of the things that people accuse Negroes of wanting. And I don't hate you. I simply want to be able to raise my children in peace and arrive at my own maturity in my own way, in peace. I don't want to be defined by you. I think that you and I might learn a great deal from each other. If you can overcome the curtain of my color. The curtain of my color is what you use to avoid facing the facts of our common history, the facts of American life. It is easy to call me a Negro or a promising black man, but in fact, I'm a man like you. I want to live like you. This country is mine too. I paid as much for it as you. White means that you are European still. And black means that I'm African. And we both know, we've both been here too long. You can't go back to Ireland or Poland or England, and I can't go back to Africa. And we will live here together, or we'll die here together. And it's not I am telling you. Time is telling you. You will listen or you will perish.
author, gay man, American, James Baldwin.
Wish you could know what it means to be me. And you'd see, you'd agree, everybody should be free, cause if we ain't, we're murderous.
Thanks for choosing This Way Out, brought to you by the nonprofit Overnight Productions. News Wrap was reported this week by Marcos Najera and Sarah Montague and produced by Brian DeShazer. Sweet Honey and The Rock, Carl Bean and Nina Simone performed some of the music you heard, and Kim Wilson composed and performed our theme music. This Way Out thanks listener donors David Hunt and Richard Merck and Brad Payton of Silicon Valley. Listener donors make this program possible. For coordinating producer Greg Gordon and everyone at This Way Out, I'm Lucia Chappell. Stay healthy, stay safe, and stay tuned, y'all.
You can follow KBRU on all your social media platforms. Just look for KBRU on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube. Get access to our new content and news, as well as special offers and contests. Like and share your favorite community radio station, KBRU.
Can't get good reception of KBRU on your radio? Just type in www.kboo.fm on your PC or laptop and click on Listen Live. We're just a mouse click away.
You are listening to KBOO Portland on 90.7 FM, K282BH Philomath on 104.3 FM, and K220HR Hood River on 91.9 FM, and on the web at kboo.fm.
Thank you for tuning in.